It's just the normal noises in here.
This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
All right, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Love Forever Changes.
Oh.
You know this album.
I do know this album.
I've vaguely heard of it, but anyway, here is a description of the album. It says, Forever Changes by Love, released in 1967, is a lush, intricate, and hauntingly beautiful blend of psychedelic rock, folk, and baroque pop. Recorded during a turbulent time for the band and for frontman Arthur Lee personally, the album stands apart from the louder, fuzz-driven sounds of the era by embracing a more acoustic, orchestral approach. Gentle guitars intertwine with mariachi-style brass, delicate strings, and Lee's poetic, often cryptic lyrics that hint at paranoia, social unrest, and fleeting beauty. The songs move between breezy, pastoral melodies and sudden, unsettling shifts, creating a mood that's both warm and slightly foreboding. A reflection of the late 1960s cultural climate, tracks like Alone Again or More Again and You Set the Scene capture a timeless, almost dreamlike quality. Though initially a modest commercial success, Forever Changes has since been hailed as one of the greatest albums of all time, a shimmering yet bittersweet portrait of a changing world.
Yeah.
Okay, I do know this. I've seen the album cover before. So yeah, this was released in November of 1967, and the genres are folk rock, orchestral pop, psychedelia, and baroque pop, and was released on Elektra Records and produced by Arthur Lee and Bruce Botnick. And there are 11 songs on the album, and the first side starts with the song Alone Again Or, and it ends with The Red Telephone. And what we like to do is we take a break at the halfway point after side one and discuss the album at that point. So if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, you can pause the album after the song Red Telephone, and we've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music, so you can get it on your preferred streaming service. And just want to remind you to check out our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress and you can get lots of cool stuff there. Like you can get these episodes the day before they go live, and you can pick an album for us to review and even get a shout out during these episodes. So definitely check that out if you're interested. But without further ado, here we go. Here is the first song on the album, Alone Again Or. So here we go.
Forget all the times I've waited patiently for you, and you'll do just what you choose to do, and I will be.
All right, and ending side one with The Red Telephone. Yeah, I'm really liking this. This is really interesting. It's like perfect psychedelic pop. It's I can definitely hear, like, especially on the last song, I can definitely hear influences. Like, I can hear like Brian Wilson, like Pet Sounds in that. But throughout the whole thing it's not exactly that. It's just, I can hear the influence, but they're doing their own thing with it. And yeah, I like the description that it's like, in this world, at the time it was like fuzzed out garage rock, and which is great, and I love that stuff. But this was sort of just a bit of a departure from that, and it's more pop, I guess, than like a proto punk thing. But I mean, it's still, there's some really good guitar work on it, and yeah, it's a really, really solid album. And I like that each song is a little bit different, but it still all kind of flows in one, it's almost like watching a movie or something. It still flows really well.
Yeah, I figured you'd probably like this one. I love this album. First time I heard it, it just really clicked with me. And not often something clicks with me the first time I hear it, but this did. And again, it is a little bit outside of the loud sort of garage rock from the period that I'm really a big fan of. But this just hit me on a level that it's, I couldn't really explain, and I don't know if I still can, but it just connected with me.
Yeah, I'm finding the same thing, to be honest. It's one of those things that, like, I don't even know why I'm connecting with it. I just am. Like, I can't, usually I can explain, well, yeah, I really like the drum beat here, and the guitar work is really good, and the vocals, it's all great, but I can't pinpoint the thing that I like most about it. It's new, but it feels familiar at the same time. Like, I haven't really heard this, but it feels like I've always known it or something.
It's got that sort of melancholy sort of atmosphere to it, I guess.
Yeah, it does. Which is sort of unusual for like psychedelic era. Usually psychedelic music is a little more, not optimistic, but like, well, yeah, optimistic, but not that this isn't optimistic, but it's sort of, yeah, I guess, yeah, a lot of psychedelic is more in a major key, and this a lot of these are in minor keys, and sort of it has that melancholy feel.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of psychedelic music that's also been sort of on the melancholic side, as opposed to being like the major key sort of thing. But I've heard a lot of both. But this one's definitely more on the latter, and I don't know, it just feels comfortable to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, it feels like I haven't heard it before, but it feels very familiar to me. Like, it feels, I think maybe that's the same feeling you had when you first heard it. It just connected with you right away. You know, and it's interesting, the album itself, like, it was like, I don't really know anything about these guys. And this is their third album. And like, when it was released, it got really like high praise. And it says initial reviews were positive. Writing for Rolling Stone in 1968, Jim Bickhart regarded Forever Changes as Love's most sophisticated album yet, applauding the orchestral arrangements and recording quality. That's something too that I've noticed, and like the string arrangements, a lot of the time in the late 60s, early 70s, string arrangements were
cheesy.
Yes, exactly.
And they're not here.
Yeah. And I don't know what the difference is, but maybe it's just because they're not as in your face, and they're just sort of there to sort of fill out the sound rather than be like high in the mix.
It's there to sort of like carry on that sort of floating sound to it, as opposed to actually there to, like, you know, fit an image or something like that. It's definitely being utilized more as a tool throughout the album, and it's not always there. In fact, usually when the electric guitars come in, that's when it's dropped out completely. But then the acoustic guitar picks up something like that, and then sometimes there's like this atmospheric sort of orchestral arrangement going on behind it. It's an interesting blend, this, and I love the way this album sort of does that. It sort of goes on to either end of that spectrum, but does it exceptionally well.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's sort of the way, like, a good example of that is the way that Benmont Tench plays the Hammond organ. Is he's not, like, doing crazy solos on it, but he's there, like, he's doing the same thing on the organ that the strings are doing here. It's sort of there to support the song and not get in the way, but using it to blend with the guitars. And like, what I was noticing about the strings here is, well, what I was noticing is I wasn't noticing them. They were there, but they were not, like, they weren't like a Tom Jones song or something where the strings are just so high in the mix and it's sappy. And it wasn't like that. It was done as almost like the part of the foundation of the song. And like you were saying, it was there not getting in the way of anything else.
Yeah. Not to slag on Tom Jones. I actually kind of like some of his stuff, but I'm thinking more along the lines of Engelbert Humperdinck or something like that.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah. That's kind of the thing that I was thinking of, yeah.
Yeah. But also, when you were talking about Benmont Tench, I'm thinking of Al Kooper was doing sort of the same thing with Bob Dylan stuff.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And he wasn't even supposed to be on the session originally. He was a guitar player, and he came in and just sat down at the organ and played. Bob Dylan liked it so much, so that's the take we're using. And it wasn't even perfect playing, but it just carried this background sort of floating thing that just carried the sound of all the rest of the instruments.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and the story behind that is like the organ is a beat late on everything.
Yes.
Because he's looking at the guitar player to see what chords to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why exactly. It's late. But it works.
It works so well. I mean, it doesn't sound like it's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's sort of what the orchestra is doing in this album.
Yeah. It's its own part, but it's not, you know, getting in the way. It's not taking over as the main feature.
It's not overly, it's melancholic, but it's not like sickly sentimental.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's done really well. And not just the strings, but all the instruments that are like that's what I was saying. Like it reminds me of Pet Sounds, because the way that Brian Wilson used different instruments and different types of instruments to create the sound, and I feel like they're doing the same thing here, Brian Wilson, Phil Spector kind of thing, where they're pairing instruments like a guitar and a piano playing the same thing to create a totally new sound. Like that's sort of the same thing they're doing here. Instantaneously, the album was really well received by both critics, and it did fairly well commercially too. It was like a pretty big album when it came out, as far as I can see, anyway.
Yeah, I heard that it was like it did okay, but it didn't like get to the top of any charts or anything like that. It was always just a little bit outside of the mainstream that way. And it's just, I don't know. I think it was exactly where it belonged and where it had to be. I think if it was too mainstream, it would have been, I don't know, maybe it would have been another Dark Side of the Moon or something like that. But it might have been, you know, pretty good for the band. But the band, there were so many personnel changes throughout this band that I think this is the only album with this lineup. They did a couple of other singles, which are on like the bonus tracks of this album that I have.
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah, and it's funny, it's like you were saying, it wasn't like a huge thing or anything. And yeah, this was like a few years before Dark Side of the Moon. And it says the album maintained a cult following, and Richie Unterberger, an American journalist, music journalist, he called it the biggest cult album of all time, which I think is pretty fitting. It's, you know, it's not like it wasn't a huge album, but it did fairly well. But it's like, it's a cult album that is just on the line of being, yeah, exactly.
It's not being entirely pop, but it's also not entirely, you know, wild out there psychedelia either. It's just sort of in between there and just hovers and does it extremely well. It's just a really good album.
So I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album. It says Arthur Lee thought it might be his last album. During the recording, Lee was convinced that he was going to die soon, which gave the songs a strangely final, almost farewell-like tone. This sense of urgency deeply shaped the lyrics and mood. So that's maybe why it feels a little melancholy. I don't know why he thought that.
I don't know why he thought that either. I had heard that. Yeah, I'd read that somewhere, probably even in the notes of this album. That he just, he was convinced he was, he didn't.
Yeah, he lived to be 61, died in 2006. So yeah, so it's interesting that he maybe just had this, I don't know if he was sick during this and you know, like I'm not sure, but, or if he just had this intuition that he might die soon, I don't know.
I think it was more the intuition. I don't think he was really sick or anything.
The album almost didn't get made by the band members. Because of drug problems and unreliability, Elektra Records initially brought in session musicians, the Wrecking Crew, to record the first two tracks. This shook the band into pulling themselves together to finish the rest of the album. And that probably goes to what you were saying earlier about the band having lots of lineup changes. That's probably why.
Yeah, no, they did. But for some reason, the lineup pretty much stayed consistent throughout the making of this album. That's right. I think I'd read somewhere that the Wrecking Crew almost came in and did the album for them for the most part. But
they were all on Pet Sounds. So I think that's sort of what gives it that same feel. And yeah, you're right. It would have been interesting to hear if there was an album that they could have done, or it would have been interesting to hear what they would have done with it. And so it was a commercial disappointment at first. While critically praised in the UK, the album didn't chart high in the US upon release. It wasn't until decades later that Forever Changes became recognized as a psychedelic masterpiece. Okay, so I guess I was wrong. It wasn't a huge hit when it came out, but like we were saying, it did okay. And it's one of those things that, in retrospect, people recognize it as an important album.
Yeah, I did also, and now that you mentioned that, I also remember something about them being a little bit bigger in the UK than they were at home side at the time. And even later on, like they, I think, right, so shortly before his death, they had a... they performed some stuff from this album and others on Jules Holland in the UK, just because that's where their audience was, primary audience was anyway.
There are some, the mariachi influences came from one of the band members, guitarist Brian McLean, who wrote and sang Alone Again, or drew from his love of Spanish and Mexican music, inspiring the use of mariachi-style horns that became a hallmark of the album's sound. And this is kind of cool. It's preserved in the Library of Congress. In 2012, Forever Changes was added to the National Recording Registry for being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant, ensuring it will be archived for future generations. So that's pretty cool. That happens all the time, where something, a piece of art or something, is just sort of flies under the radar at the time that it comes out, and then, you know, slowly people start to discover it, and they say, no, this really is important. But yeah, so those are some interesting facts about the album. But I guess we'll get back into the second side of the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at the Pick a Disc podcast. So check that out. And here we go.
Do you like music? Do you like podcasts? Chances are you like music podcasts. Take this one, for example, Pick a Disc, where every fortnight a guest comes on to talk about an album for whatever reason they want to. Sometimes I like it, sometimes perhaps even something else other than just like it. You just listen to the podcast and find out. We talk about the album, we talk about the songs, we talk about the artists, we talk about tangent things that are slightly related, and sometimes we deviate off tangents. But don't worry, we'll always bring it back in the end. But you can find us on all your social medias and all the podcast apps for searching for Pick a Disc. You can also find us on the part of the Weedig Podcast Network under Linktree/WeedigPodcast. And until then, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Can't decide if he should fight for what his father thinks is right. There are people wearing frowns who'll screw you up, but they would rather screw you down. At my request, I ask for nothing.
All right, and ending the album with You Set the Scene. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say about this. I mean, this is a fantastic album. I like that last song. I like the send off, the sort of like almost a cinematic sort of thing. The album, the songwriting, the arrangements on it are all really well done, and I like that the band pulled themselves together and they didn't have to get outside musicians to play on it, that they all sort of, obviously there's additional musicians, but the band is the core. And I like that they were able to do it themselves, and you know, they did a great job. I really can't say much enough good things about it. You know,
yeah, I'm glad. I'm just one of these albums that I'm just glad it was made. Just the way it just connects with me, and I hope it connects with other people out there too. And it's just it's one of my favorites. So
yeah, I think it's I think it's gonna be one of my favorites too. I mean, it's I just I really, really enjoyed it. I mean, it's one of those things, and very much like Pet Sounds, it's one of those things where you can just put it on, no matter what mood you're in, you can just put it on and enjoy it. And it's going to put you in a good mood. And even though this album is a little more dark and a little more melancholy, I think maybe sort of like, like some darker music, maybe it's good to put on when you're in a down mood, but I don't think it's only for that. You know, it's just one of those things that's, it's good. And, you know, it probably can maybe help you get through a tough time or something, but even if you're in a good mood, I think you can still put it on and enjoy it.
Yeah, I do. It's a good road trip album. I know this from first experience. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it. It's just really good.
Yeah. So I guess that brings us to the time of, like, what would be your three highlights on the album?
I like pretty much everything on it, but I think if I were to go for my favorites, I might go with The Daily Planet, The Red Telephone, and Live and Let Live. Those are probably my favorites.
Those are pretty good. Oh, by the way, I think it was it might have been The Daily Planet. Neil Young was an arranger on that.
Oh, wow.
But it was still when he was with Buffalo Springfield. Yeah. I don't know what the connection there is, like how he met. Must have been like an LA thing. They were both out in LA. Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. Neil Young arranged The Daily Planet, which, by the way, is one of my picks as well. And the other two, I like Bummer in the Summer, and the last track, You Set the Scene. I thought those were probably my favorites, but honestly, I could pick any of them, any song, and they would be. Like they're all it's one of those rare things where, I don't think that any song is better than any of the others. I think they're all like high quality. So it is tough to pick just three, but if I had to, those would be my three. Yeah.
I'd also like to put a shout out to the titles of a couple of the songs, Maybe the People Would Be the Times, or Between Clark and Hilldale, and The Good Humor Man, He Sees Everything Like This. I just like, they're beautifully dense titles. I love them.
And I think maybe even they don't know what they mean, but still. Yeah. So I think I know the answer, but I gotta ask it anyways. Would you listen to this album again?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Have and will again.
Yeah, same here. I mean, I love this, and I think I'm gonna have to add it to my library, and you know, see if I can find a vinyl copy somewhere. I mean, this is a new favorite of mine.
I don't have a vinyl copy. I have a CD copy.
Yeah, well, that's good enough too, you know. But yeah, so I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to go to the website, go to polyphonicpress.com, and you can go get all these episodes, all the past episodes that we've done so far. And you can also go to the contact page, and we'd love to maybe read some of your comments on one of these episodes, and or we'd just love to hear from you and get some feedback. And and don't forget to follow the show if this is your first time listening, wherever you're listening. And leave a rating and review if you can, because it really helps out the show and gets people, helps us find new listeners. And and again, check out the Patreon. Lots of cool stuff over there. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.